Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？見えないよ。
あ、こんなところ。
I miss you.What's good, Internet? It is March 3rd, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, coming to you live from Lobby 1 in Vice HQ here in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, New York. 3-3-2017. It is Switch Day, baby.
Yeah, Switch Day.
Joining me, Danielle Riendo.
Hi.
Patrick Klepek.
Getting pumped.
He's pumping his fists in the
literally
air.
Literally getting pumped.
Waiting for a truck to show up with
multiple
a box.
Trucks. No, multiple trucks. I'm waiting on UPSs. I'm waiting on FedExes.
What's coming? Oh. What's in what?
Zelda is in the UPS.
No, you ordered from two different. There's two different boxes coming.
Well, yeah, I did not get a.
No,
I did not get
Patrick.
I did not get a switch through Amazon, who delivers through UPS. I got a switch through Target, who delivers through FedEx.
Patrick, you've just set yourself up for the worst weekend.
Oh, no.
What if Zelda comes and the Switch doesn't?
They're both on a truck. I'm good.
Lots of things are on trucks, Patrick.
Oh, man.
Oh, no, I'm fine with Zelda not showing up. There's a solution to that
problem.
No,
I know that. I'm saying the other way around. If Zelda comes and the Switch doesn't.
I can still go to Costco, and there's a Target around the corner. I feel like I got options.
You'll be all right.
Stop trying to tear me down. I'm in a good mood.
It's Friday. It's Switch Day.
The Switch is out. We have a Switch.
One.
Right here. It's a Switch. I can show it to you now.
I got one at midnight last night at a GameStop.
Did you go?
No, I was really sick.
So
my girlfriend went.
Yeah, what you meant by I got one was my girlfriend
I
got
have
one.
Waited in line at midnight events for her multiple times, including Fallout 4.
Uh-huh.
So I feel like it's okay. We have a very equal partnership.
You stayed for her to get Fallout 4, and she stayed for you to get Zelda. I think,
yeah.
I'm just saying, I think maybe she did better.
She kind of did a little more.
I'm
going to
put this down, because otherwise I'm going to play Zelda more.
And yeah. You might scratch that screen.
I got a screen protector on there. Nintendo, when they send the review unit of the Switch, they also sent a Pro Controller, one of the charging Joy-Con holder things, and this case with a screen protector.
So does the screen protector go on even while you're walking it around, or is the protector just when you're like traveling with it?
Oh, it's on the screen. It's just like an iPad. It's like a tablet screen protector where you get like the little air bubbles and you push out the air bubbles.
It doesn't look bad. Like it doesn't make the screen look shitty. That's why I've never gotten those for a phone or an iPad.
Honestly, it looks great.
You can't even hear a look. You can't even tell. I'm holding it up from across a room.
Okay.
It's fine.
God, I love that red color.
It's a good red color.
I love it.
So I've spent the last week. We can talk about the Switch.
Yes, we can.
I spent the last week with the Switch. I got it last week when I first came back. Again, I took a
lift. See, this was me taking one for the team for you, hiding it under my desk in unmarked boxes.
Yeah. I appreciate that. You hit the Switch. You didn't take it. You could have taken it. You didn't.
I could have taken it.
I would have taken it.
I thought about saying, you know what, Danielle, you just take it, and then I'll pick it up from you on Thursday or whatever.
I thought you might have actually.
I considered
that way,
it. I really did. I thought about doing the nice, good thing, and then vacation makes a man selfish.
Is that what happened?
A little bit.
All right.
I'm just like, man, I got to treat
myself.
It's
just like Ayn Rand, wrote in her,
That's for sure. In Atlas Shrugged. Vacation makes a man selfish. The true form of man is that's being at
Austin
leisure.
Shrugged, I see.
Austin Shrugged.
Yeah,
Austin
that's Shrugged. The real.
Well, this is the title of the episode. Let me write it down.
Austin Shrugged.
So I ended up getting the Switch, and at first I was definitely doing the thing of like, I don't want to take this places. This is like it's big and cut. Like I don't want someone
to
snatch it.
It's new.
It's new. It's not out. I don't want like 12-year-olds being like, "What's that? How'd you get a Switch?"
And then they just
mommy, that boy
it.
Stole a Switch.
There was like, there was a photo going around on Twitter where Arthur Geis Geese. From
I
Polygon. Had been, you know, he was commuting with it, and some rando took a picture, and so like, oh man, there's some dude just on the BART playing a Switch.
Oh, no.
And then someone that is friends with that guy saw that photo and said, yeah, that's like Arthur from Polygon. Like, it was just a funny situation, like exactly what you were trying to avoid or not run into.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. It's a scary thing to be like, oh, I have this thing that in the documentation Nintendo sent me specifically says, like, you're responsible for this. Like, don't come crying to us. If you get snatched, like, yeah. If you're on the end
switched,
and someone switches.
Is that, like, what it...
Yeah.
You got switched.
Yeah,
on the train.
I got switched. I used to have a Switch in my hands. Now I got nothing.
Now you switched.
You got it.
You got jurors and switched.
Eventually, yes. Eventually, I started thinking it out. I actually went out to, breakfast on my vacation with a friend. I went to brunch at, like, a diner near me. And I was like, you want to see Zelda real quick while we're waiting for food? And so it started there. And I was like, that felt okay. Like, I didn't feel too weird doing that for some reason. And so then when I started coming into work, I did start taking it on the train and, like, on the bus. And did the thing that I didn't think I would do, which is, like, was able to get into playing Zelda in these little 20-minute chunks where it's like, okay, for the next 20 minutes, I'm just going to do – I really need to go get more mushrooms that can give me more extra hearts. So I'm going to go do that for the next 20 minutes. Or I really wanted to climb this tower and add this section to my map. And so I'll do that for the next 20 minutes. And I felt really comfortable. That said, I would feel more comfortable with the gray controllers than the red and the
sure.
The
neon, like, steel.
It feels like having a red car, which is like, man, I'm going to get stolen. Like, this is, it's too eye-grabbing. I need something a little more, if I could get, like, a nice brown or wood grain.
wood grain Switch.
So
I want to I ordered the gray Switch. Because initially, my initial gut reaction was that red and blue looks straight up ugly on that machine. Mm-hmm. I've since come around to thinking it looks sort of charming. And I also would imagine that, especially for like multiplayer games, it would be useful to have multicolored Joy-Con. So at some point, when I break down and buy an extra two, which I don't think I'm going to do it for Bomberman, because initial impressions of that game are not good.
Not great. No.
And, oh, the 1-2 Switch I can probably get by on the two Joy-Cons that I've got.
Probably. Snipper Clips is up to 4. And is cool.
But those Joy-Cons are expensive as shit.
Well, here's the other thing is you're going to get the red and the blue, and then you're still going to have one red and one blue, and then you're going to eventually be like, I want two red so I can have, like, the double red look or the two blue.
Mm.
It's all accessorizing. Like, what shoes are you wearing today? Are you wearing the shoes that match blue or the shoes that, you know, like, that's going to be where we're at.
Yeah.
So,
I just wear brown shoes. That's all I do.
Me too.
I think my shoes match.
Brown goes with everything, so.
It turned out.
Could get a wood-trimmed shoe, then I'd be set.
I've started buying, when I have to get suits, I get them in a gray that even works with a brown shoe.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
It works.
I'm with you.
Learning to like a brown shoe is like one of those moments of adulthood for me. Like going from sneakers to brown dress shoes is a lot like getting excited I bought a new comforter. Do you know what I mean?
I get that.
And like, oh man, I'm fucking stoked. Like, these shoes look exactly in the middle of casual and professional. I'm a fucking adult now.
I have never owned brown shoes.
Yeah, I think it's like I'm definitely in the world of mask presentation.
Sure,
it's like you gotta have your pair of shoes that makes you look like you could either be a lawyer or a cowboy.
Okay,
welcome to America.
Okay. Yeah. Cowboy lawyer.
Yeah. This fall.
Upcoming. That seems more like a Netflix show.
That's a Netflix show. Did you know that the original Supreme Court justices were like traveling judges that would go on horseback to little towns across America to like judiciate over local cases?
That's amazing.
It's so much cooler.
That's amazing,
it's
actually.
They also had a home court in like D.C. or whatever, but like maybe not D.C. I don't actually. Philly
might
probably.
Have been Philly. Yeah, Philly. That makes sense.
But like they would go out into Virginia or whatever and be like, no, give him his pigs. Just give the guy his pigs.
This is a Supreme Court ruling. Seven pigs to Mr.
Pigs.
Johnson.
Please.
You know, like.
And two people. Because America was fucked.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
I don't want to laugh at that. Stop making me laugh at that.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Mm. Anyway, how's it going?
It's really good.
Switch is out. I did a write-up on Zelda, and I if you're listening to this on the podcast feed, you'll know that I also did a little recorded version of that piece of my like weird non-review It was a writing that was definitely one of those examples of like, man, I'm really glad I don't have to properly review this game. I'm glad I don't have to explain the durability system, because if I was doing a review, I would feel the need to do that. I don't need to talk at length about the frame rate hitches, which are a real thing in that game, but also never once got in the way for me. And like, I don't want to have a paragraph where I have to explain all of that.
Yeah, reviews always feel like you have to then end up like justifying the things you like that you'd rather just hand wave away.
Exactly. And it's just like, and I've written reviews at a bunch of different places that give you different amounts of leeway.
Yeah.
Like the GameSpot style of review needs to be very consumer focused. The paste style review, let me tell you, can be a complete whatever you want to do. And like the Giant Bomb is somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Jeff and everyone there always gave me a lot of leeway to get weirdly personal. But at the end of the day, I still felt like I'm telling you whether or not this is a thing you should buy.
Yep.
And so I need to address a broad enough audience, because some people really do care about frame rate hitches. And I get that if you're built that way, if you like see that frame rate go like, ugh, and it like makes you feel bad inside, you should know that.
It's like me and green screens. Like, I am now utterly trained, probably from watching a lot of bad horror films. Mm. Like green screens, I can see it. Like I can even in movies that
the
are like clearly spent
edge.
A ton of money trying to mask it. Like, I see you, green screen. You can't hide from me. And it really bothers me. It takes me out of the movie.
That's you fair. Know? So have you spent any time with the Switch that Patricia brought home?
Not really. I watched her play Zelda, and I'm playing on the Wii U. So
how's that different? Because that's like one of the big questions we've been getting a lot of. Is like, how does the Wii U one stack up?
I can't exactly tell specific differences at this point. It seems like there's definitely frame rate issues in the Wii U version, but I'm also seeing some frame rate issues in the Switch version, so I honestly don't know if there's like a major performance difference. I am the least tech savvy in terms of very specific frame rate issues, performance issues, whether or not the textures are exactly the same, that sort of thing. So it's nothing that's impacting my enjoyment personally.
Like, this is one of those things that's weird, is that like I am not a tech person. I understand enough about the technologies of video games to do the job I do and to have conversations in this space and to be interested when someone like Cowboy at Naughty Dog talks about like the technology that goes into making those games look so beautiful. But I'm not someone whose personal experience has been often impeded by technical hiccups and stuff like that. Like, like a lot of Bethesda games, I just did a guide to games on State of Decay. Like, a lot of my favorite games don't run great. And so you would think that means I just don't care about this at all. But I actually am, like, eagerly anticipating the Digital Foundry breakdown. Digital Foundry is, like, a subsection of Eurogamer that is, like, really tech-focused and does these incredible in-depth videos on the differences between the different version of the game across console and the other console and PC or whatever. And so I'm really curious to see what that what they end up saying about the Wii U version of the Switch.
Yeah,
so,
I'm curious
or of Zelda,
as well,
rather.
Even though I don't.
The Wii U version of the Switch.
The Wii U version of the Switch.
Little Freudian slip there.
It's all right.
You're going to get a lot of Freudian slips when you name your console the Switch. It's just going to happen.
It's definitely the territory you're in at that point. I will say that I think the game is awesome. You know, you've already said that.
You say it now, please.
You know, now I'm saying it.
Talk to me about your experience with
it. I'm very early in. Mm-hmm. I'm only about
a
couple hours in.
On
I'm
the plateau
I'm still in the plateau. Okay. I've done a couple of the little shrines that are sort of tutorial shrines. They're giving you your runes, which are sort of like your abilities or your some of the items
like
in previous
bombs
Zelda games. Bombs, magnetism, you know, that sort of stuff. I love how it immediately lets you have a lot of freedom. It's not like, Link, look at me. You have to do this. Now you have to do this. Now you have to do this the way previous games tutorialized and held your hand and were really frustrating, I think, for return players. Skyward Sword was something like, I don't know, a couple of hours of tutorials, and Twilight Princess is infamous for being like 4 hours before you were really doing anything.
And I think I got through those first 4 hours of Twilight Princess, and I got to like hour 5, and I was so exhausted from those first 4 that I just never came back to it.
Totally, which sucks because there's a lot of good dungeons in that
game. I bet. I've heard
that. But like, I totally I would play a version of
Twilight Princess that just stripped out all that stuff and just like, right. hey, dungeon, Twilight dungeon. Princess, dungeons.
Dungeon edition.
That sounds like Twilight Princess Dungeons is definitely a mobile game with a guy going like, rah, on the art for sure.
I made an ah face for people listening. I like that. That was really good. I immediately went all the way Freudian slip with Twilight Princess Dungeons and Switch and SNM and all that. Yep, and good. I was like, yeah, that's a Zelda game. Mm-hmm. Anyway. This is awesome because it allows you freedom to learn the sort of things you need to learn, but without just beating you over the head with it. It actually feels like you're starting to be able to explore and get that little sense of wonder from being in this open-air adventure.
There we go. That's what they call it. They're calling it that.
On the box, the genre is open-air adventure.
I like it. Which is lovely,
right?
I completely rolled my eyes at it when I first heard it, but then
it's
like...
It's very Nintendo.
It's very this game versus previous. I guess, like, I'm surprised that Skyward Sword wasn't called that. That's literally about flying through
flying
the air.
All the damn time. Yeah.
But this, it feels right for this in terms of feeling like, you know, actually, I mentioned this to you. We did an episode of your other podcast, Idle Weekend, last night. That'll go up sometime this weekend, presumably. On that, I mentioned that one of the things that's really struck me about this game, especially after talking to some other people about it, was the fact that, like, when you add a chunk of the world to your map, when you climb a tower, like you do in every other so many other games that have big open worlds,
open air,
it adds the section, the region to your map. But unlike most of those other games, it doesn't add the things that are inside of that space. Like, it doesn't say, oh,
12 activities.
Right.
Yeah. I hate that. It drives me up a wall. Right. It makes me wish that I didn't scan the area.
Right, totally. So, this ended up being one of my problems with Horizon, one of the things that happened in Horizon that was frustrating to me was I bought a thing
Don't buy the maps.
I bought the map because I thought it was for that one region. I was like, oh, I'll buy these maps for this one little area and I'll get to see all the collectibles. And immediately my entire map was covered in
ruins
stuff.
Ruins the map.
No way.
You can't hide them as far
You can't
can
hide
tell.
Them. It's bad. That part's very bad. That's like, oh, this is the first time you've made a game like this. You didn't think about letting me hide different icons. In Zelda, in Breath of the Wild, it just adds the like names, if you zoom in, of specific locations. Like, it'll say, here's Lanayru Peak. Here's Hateno Village. Like, here's, the Valley of Death or whatever, right? And so you can walk, I heard a rumor from this NPC that there is some sort of weird activity happening in the Valley of Death or at the peak of the Lanayru Mountain. I'll set a marker there and I'll start going in that direction. But it doesn't say, here are all the outposts. It doesn't say, here are all the shrines. And so there is this feeling of self-direction and of like, I'm going to climb a big mountain nearby just so I can get the lay of the land, see what I can see, add stuff to my map, and then go where I want to go.
Yeah.
So that part of it, then that's the part of it that feels like an open air adventure to me. Is that like, it's less directed and in the process makes me feel a lot more free. But also, to your point, it's also able to tutorialize you but much more organically, I think, a lot through the shrines, where like every shrine sort of teaches you a lesson about the game through puzzle design. And that's really cool.
Oh, it's the best.
There was an example I saw in one of the reviews I was reading this week where there's some puzzle involving I don't want to get too spoilery, but like there's a puzzle involving like where you're like, moving the Switch controller in order to like move a ball around, let's say. The reviewer was having, I think it was Jason Schreier at Kotaku, who was having trouble getting through that. And he realized, what if I just flipped the Switch controller over? And then
I did the same thing.
And that was just was a valid way of solving the puzzle.
And it was – so I used that example last night again on Idle Weekend because I had that exact same thing happen to me with that puzzle where like I even just set the controller down by mistake and realized like, oh, wait a sec. Wait, can I just turn this whole – and it reminded me of like what's the Hotel Dusk or something like that in for the DS when you had to close the clamshell of the DS to solve a puzzle where it's like, oh man, like you, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but the fact that you're letting me use it this way is really cool.
It's so rad.
I mean, that's, as someone who has not played Breath of the Wild yet, that's like that design ethos, which feels very anti-Nintendo, but is very exciting to see them, you know, starting to play with this idea of, like just essentially saying yes to everything and being okay with you bending and breaking their game. Like there are rules, there is a structure to it, but that in the past, they've been happier to kind of funnel you along to what they've designed for you. Right. And in this game, the idea that you can sometimes feel like, I shouldn't be doing this, and maybe you shouldn't, but the game is okay with it, and the game has been designed and encourages you to have that feeling, which makes you more uncomfortable in a Nintendo game than it would in other games, because that's just not what they do. Like, that's an incredibly exciting prospect, not only for this game, but that what that possibly means for the future of Nintendo design.
Yes. That's exciting.
Yeah, it to further the open air analogy, it really does feel like Nintendo has always had like these restaurant experiences or whatever, an indoor theme park or something that is so perfectly controlled, and it is a really good experience. It is linear and it has the ups and the downs in places that you like it. But now they're like, no, we're setting this literally in an open air market instead, where you can have all different experiences. But the same design ethos went behind it in terms of like having all sorts of different beats and different sort of feelings and different player experience goals, as I like to say.
It's funny that you bring up kind of enclosed theme park design, because I actually think that what Zelda does, what Breath of the Wild does really well, I'm trying to say Breath of the Wild and not just Zelda. What Breath of the Wild does really well is blends the sort of, it understands that. All right, so I had a conversation once with a guy over at Rockstar about the way that they designed Red Dead Redemption, and that they reached a point during the development where they realized that there was a big difference between large spaces and open worlds, and that open worlds, to really create something that felt like a world, required a very careful visual and kind of architectural design that communicated the sense of scale and scope to you wherever you were about like the larger space, and that connected it in a way that was very careful. And I think Breath of the Wild could have been just a big space game, and instead is what this guy who I was talking to at Rockstar, shout outs to Simon, is an open world game. And part of that is something that's very theme park driven. Someone over on Twitter, Charlie, at CharlieCon on Twitter, linked me to this great little piece on the theory of theme parks.blogspot.com about weenies. Do you know what a weenie is?
I've heard the term.
I mean, there's a lot of ways I can answer that, Austin. Uh-huh. I'm going to let you take that.
The weenie, this is from the theory of themeparks.blogspot.com. The weenie is an architectural concept named such by Disney Imagineering in describing, quote, visual magnets that draw guests from one area to another. In Disney parks, these are seen everywhere and on every scale. From the turnstiles of the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World Resort in Orlando, Florida, guests are led throughout the park by the draw of weenies. First drawn into the center hub by Cinderella's castle, then from the hub to each of the lands, by gateways that indicate the theme of the land that follows, then within each land to the major attractions by yet another weenie, like Space Mountain's Cone and Spires in Tomorrowland, or the distant peaks of Big Thunder Mountain Railroad in Frontierland. Through these magnets, I don't know why they just don't call them magnets.
Yeah.
Through these magnets, Disney is able to draw guests to the far reaches of its park and create avenues of predictable foot traffic. If you're like the sort of theory around theme parks and mall design and any sort of like consumer space is so really interesting. Like, if you're someone who's into that stuff, I can recommend a book from a professor I used to have called Vatican to Vegas, which is like a theory of virtual reality, in which he just means constructed spaces. And Breath of the Wild is filled with that, or it's designed in that way, where like no matter where I look or no matter where I am, I can either see Hyrule Castle corrupted at the center of the map, or I can see one of the main magnets, one of the main weenies for whatever zone I'm in, whether that's a huge natural mountainous tower or a volcano erupting smoke, or there are some things that are like this that move around in the space, actually, which I'm not going to talk too much about because my first experience was just incredible. And so like those sorts of things are very carefully handcrafted and make it feel different than playing something like Horizon, which is a game, I had primarily really positive time with, but that, you know, they could have made it so that there are a couple of those. There's like the, a couple of the towers, I think, in the kind of southwestern part of the map that you can see whenever you're down there that work. But by and large, it doesn't feel super connected because of the shape of the map and some other things. And so that's one of those ways in which the world of Breath of the Wild, I always felt like I knew what place I was in, to the point that there were occasionally times where I could just tell you the direction north was at. Like, I'd get my bearings in this very natural sense based on seeing landmarks out of the corner of my eye.
It's really fascinating the way they do that also in theme parks. Has to do with, you have your sight lines, you have your sort of big things that you're looking up at, but also the texture of the ground changes with each land and each zone. And I think that Zelda does that as well, just sort of seeing, you know, from things you've played. And also, you know, I went to my first snowy zone the other day, and it's like obvious it's snow. But even as you're sort of in the transition period, like there's a different type of grass that's a little hardier, and then it's mixed in with a little bit of snow. And like it does this in a really subtle way, but visually it's already sort of priming you to get ready for different mechanics, for different things. It's so smart. I love it. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, I think that's just one of the things that makes this game really brilliant. If you haven't listened to the kind of write up that I did, or if you haven't read it, I am very high on this. It's one of my favorite games probably in years. I'm having a hard time thinking the last time. Like, the last game that I can say for sure that is like a fave of mine that's like made it into the canon, it was Invisible Ink. Yeah. And that's such a different game that it's hard to make that comparison, apples to oranges, and such a different budget and such a different, like, everything
It's when you start to think about a game that people are going to make fun of you for bringing up too often, right? Like, that's what happened with me in Spelunky. That's what happened with me in Dark Souls, like, where it becomes almost a trope because it becomes ingrained as a type of game that you look to as a touchstone because, like, its design ideas encompass a lot of what you enjoy about video games.
Totally. I mean, well, and so that's one of the funny things for me in this game has been seeing it be received so well is surprising because I see so many of my personal touchstones in it. And that's, I mean, it's probably the case that everyone who loves it sees their personal touchstones in it. You know, when I talked to Dan Reichert about it, he says, this reminds me of playing, you know, A Link to the Past for the first time. When I talk about it, I say, oh, it's like it's the new Far Cry 2.
Yeah.
Patrick, I won't be surprised if you don't see Spelunky in this game because – so here's my friend Jack started playing it last night. He got it on the Wii U, and he sent me a message that was this. He said, ha, 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 wow, Austin, what the fuck, playing this thing. Explaining Zelda doesn't really cut it, huh? My first combat encounter was just the weirdest, most involved combat I've played in ages. I got chased up a tree. I ran out of weapons and started throwing barrels at the enemies, but the barrels just picked up speed down a hill and fell into a river. One of them set his own sword on fire and then chased me into a tall grass and then burnt himself alive. So I took his sword and tried throwing it at the remaining one, who caught it out of the air and killed me with it. What is this game? Austin, he dropped his club and picked it up and he screamed and pointed at me like, that's mine. And like, And there's been there was a little video going around this morning of a guy who was running around being chased by moblins, which are some of the bokoblins, which are like the lowest tier enemy. But even those are split into different kind of hierarchical categories based on their skin color, like the way people are separated in the world. There are red ones and blue ones and black ones and silver ones. Silver. I have to talk about this later because I think that there is – I actually think that there is secretly a leveling system happening in the game that is behind the scenes in terms of what enemies are in the world. But the blue ones are the first like boss bokoblins that you fight. The red ones are everywhere, and then there's the blue ones. And this guy's being chased by a red one and a blue one, and he's like getting bombs and dropping them behind him as he's being chased. And the first time he drops one and it blows up, he knocks the guys away. And then the blue bokoblin gets up and starts chasing him again, and he's like, I got you. And he drops the bomb, and he runs away, and he's about to hit the detonator. And the bokoblin punts it at him and catches him in the back with his own bomb, and it kills him. And it's like, those little moments are so good and do feel very Spelunky or like roguelike in the sense of like everyone's playing with the same rules. And it's because of that you're going to generate really cool stories, you know? I'm way into this game.
Yeah.
The secret leveling thing, and I want people to pay attention to this while they're playing, is at the start of the game, the world is clearly broken up into what feels like two tiers of enemy types. There's like the regular enemies, and then there's the blue, there's like the red or whatever green version of the enemies, depending on what type of enemy it is. And then there's like a slightly higher blue version. And then you start seeing the black versions. And now I'm going back through earlier areas and I'm starting to see silver versions of enemies. And but this isn't a game with There's no strength stat. Right. There is your equipment, which gives you like the damage that you do and the damage you can take. There are hearts and stamina meters that you can increase through doing shrines and trading in the currency you get from that for more hearts and more stamina. And I don't know if that's how it's doing it, but I'm it feels like it knows I've leveled up, yeah. which is weird when the leveling isn't. There isn't a strength
meter.
It's
an apparent to you.
Right. Or, like, yeah. It's just I happen to have good weapons right this second. So I'm curious. Someone will break that down at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah. Analysis.
So, that's Zelda. And I actually want to come back to Zelda in a second. We're going to have a very quick guest, but I don't know if he's ready to come through quite yet.
When he comes through, we'll know.
We will know when he comes through.
It's going to be like a surprise. The systems will interact in such a way.
It'll be a shock.
It's going to be a surprise. You know what I'm saying?
So what else do you have coming for the Switch?
That's it. I can't justify $50 for 1-2 Switch, but we'll see how I feel after a couple of beers tonight.
50 is a lot. Yeah, good. Do you have any people coming over?
My wife and child.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like a 1-2 Switch party.
I can't. $50 is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
But there's a lot of sunk cost into this thing I've already purchased, so what's another $50? I can't. Because I'm sure it'd be fun. I wish it was $30.
I'm gonna pivot really quick. Our friend Jason from Motherboard is here.
Hi, my Waypoint brethren.
You can't hear Patrick because you don't have headphones on, but that's okay. Jason Kobler?
Kebler. Yeah.
I don't know how it's an OE situation. I don't know.
I don't care at this point. It's. I'll take whatever.
All right. Yeah.
We're splitting the mic really quick because we're going to do a hot pod drop.
Yeah, we're doing a promo effort here.
Yeah.
Very excited.
You at Motherboard. You guys already have Radio Motherboard.
We're
Waypoint Radio.
Yeah, I know. You're very interesting. Very creative of you guys.
We really thought about it really long and hard, and then it just kind of came to me in my sleep. I think, and I was like, oh yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's kind of same deal with us when we were coming up with Radio Motherboard. So Radio Motherboard is our podcast that's kind of like this, where we sit around and talk about technology and the future. It's very fun to do sort of a hangout like this, but we also send reporters out into the field quite often, and we had no outlet for that in audio form. So we just launched a brand new podcast called Plus Plus Podcast.
It's a good name.
Plus Plus.
It is a good name, but it's also a problematic name in that it's all one word spelled out, because searching for plus plus is very difficult. Like, if you put plus signs, nothing comes up. But I like the name when you say it out loud.
It's good P's. Good plosive sounds.
Exactly, yes. So there's the alliteration aspect there. So it's plus plus podcast, all spelled out one word. But if you search plus plus, nothing comes up.
Okay.
So
you'll get there.
Yeah,
so plus plus podcast, that's on Google Play, that's on iTunes.
Yeah, all podcast apps. I haven't even told you what it's about.
You told me that reporters go into the field.
Yeah, so we send people all over the world to do stories. We do video stories. We do reports on our website. But we haven't, like, when we're out in the field, there's often interesting sounds, interesting stories to tell, and we haven't done, like, a produced podcast of that sort of stuff. So, for instance, this is a much more produced, edited podcast that tells, like, narrative stories of people who are changing the world. Our first story is about a hacker in Canada who was killed by the Canadian police under very mysterious circumstances. There's a crossbow involved. There's a bit of racism involved, which is sort of problematic. Yeah. So that's a really interesting story. That's our first episode, and it dropped today. Next week, I went to this electronics recycling center in Texas to find out what happens to our old TVs. So
the story depressing?
It's super depressing. Yeah, they're not all depressing, but the first two episodes are kind of depressing.
Yeah, plus depressing. I got you.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a preview of the first four episodes because the first two are quite depressing, but then we have some uplifting ones. So I wanted to be like, hang with us. You know, we're gonna tell a story of like this group that's lobbying for the right to repair iPhones, game consoles. There's a huge push right now to. All around the country to enshrine the right to repair, so require Sony, Microsoft to sell replacement parts, and they're lobbying pretty hard against it. But there's this group of grassroots independent repair people who are going all around the country and pushing for that legislation. So I got to like embed with this lobbying effort, which usually you hear like lobbying is a bad thing, but it is kind of interesting when you have a group of like 10 people who are just like you and me going to their local state congressman and saying, we need this.
Right.
And
I don't want to buy a new Xbox One just because my old Xbox One broke. Yeah. I want to be able to repair this thing. That seems like it's my right as a consumer. Let me do that. And there are people in the games industry who are lobbying against that and trying to make that less legal. And
yeah. So the ESA is pushing against it. The entertainment software industry, which includes like Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, a lot of the publishers as well. And the argument here is that they like to repair their own things. So they can monopolize repair. Yeah exactly.
So we'll hear a clip of that right now, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Hey, loyal Motherboard fans. This is Jason Kebler. You might know my voice from Radio Motherboard.
And I'm Ankita Rao. I'm an editor here at Motherboard.
And today we're very proud to give you a short preview of a new podcast we've got called Plus Plus Podcast. That's Plus Plus, all one word. So how is this any different from Radio Motherboard?
This is the first podcast that takes us out of the studio and on the road. And in these first few episodes, we send our staff to Canada, India, and Texas to tell you about the people and the machines that are shaping the future.
Wow, Texas. Who went there?
I have no idea.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
It was me.
The bravest one of us all.
Our first episode is launching on Friday. Our Canadian reporter Jordan Pearson tells us about the mysterious death of hacker Sam Maloney.
How did a quiet, talented computer programmer who was going back to school as a mature student end up dead?
When the first shot hit him, it hit him in the chest, and then they shot him in the face. Why would they shoot him in the face after he's already on the floor in a sitting position? Does that even make sense? He's sitting on the floor in a sitting position, looking as if he's dead or out of it, right? And yet they shot him in the face. What? That sounds like an execution to me.
Motherboard features editor Brian Anderson learns what's holding back smart gun technology from making our guns safer.
Do you sell any smart guns in this shop?
There is no such thing as a smart gun. If there is a device of any kind that would be put onto a firearm in the defense of your life and it fails, then there is no use to have that device. It just will not work. So there's nothing that they can do with smart gun technology that would convince me that it would be good.
I went to an electronics recycling center in Dallas, Texas to learn what happens with our old televisions. This is 340 pound TV. One of the things why I'm interested in this is people don't think about what happens to their old things. Is it a dangerous job? It seems like it might be.
If you don't dismantle that CRT tube the right way and hit that yoke the right way, it can explode.
I traveled to garment factories in India to find out if automation could actually work here.
How many garments are produced here every day?
950.
No, per day, total 4,500.
Oh my God.
4,000 to 5,000 pieces per day we are switching, yeah. Okay.
And I got a behind-the-scenes look at the group that's lobbying for the right to repair.
When we get in front of legislators now, we say, it doesn't matter what it is. If it has a chip in it, it's a problem. So it doesn't matter if it's a baby monitor or refrigerator, a cell phone or tractor. It's the chip that is giving manufacturers an intrusion into your property rights.
Yes, this is a preview of Plus Plus Podcast. It's going to be coming out this Friday, the first episode with Sam Maloney and Jordan Pearson. It's Plus Plus Podcast, all spelled out and one word. You can find it on iTunes and any other podcast app. Anything else?
Nope, that's it. See you in the future.
See you in the future. Very good. Thank you so much, Austin and Danielle, for having me here.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Twitch.
Hi, Twitch. All right. And yeah, you can find us at Motherboard if you're not already
on what's that the train. What's the URL? What's the URL?
So motherboard.vice.com. We're at Motherboard on Twitter. And then
Do you have any dope like vanity URLs?
No, we don't.
Really?
I've always wanted one. We've wanted motherboard.diamonds for a while.
Oh, you should get that.
Yeah, yeah, so
we have a bunch.
TK.
Listen,
you have to. Oh, motherboard.tv is
motherboard.tv
easier,
works.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
We got,
oh,
right,
there
so
you
we
go.
Have waypoint.zone.
Okay.
We have new.donk.city.
Oh my god, you have new donk city?
New.donk.city. We got digitalpyramids.com. Shout out to Chief Keef.
Creamyroll.
You've heard of Crunchyroll. We're Creamyroll.
Okay, okay.
There's a bunch of them.
We have a few. Bazinga.zone.
Bazinga.zone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, all the good ones.
Not to like overstay my welcome, but what's the word on the Switch?
You're going to have to listen to the last 25 minutes of this podcast.
Obviously, I assume that. Yeah,
it's pretty cool. It's like, have you gotten
to... I played it. Yeah, okay. I played it. I just meant like, what's the word on the Twitches? Like,
I think people are... On the Twitches, yeah. I think people right now are so stoked on Zelda,
yeah,
that it's hard to get a general vibe around the Switch stuff. They did just come out and announce some big independent titles over the next couple of months that they're going to be dropping, relationships with some smaller independent publishers and developers. And so that has given it a little bit of a shot in the arm in terms of feeling like there are going to be things to play over the next 6 months.
Yeah.
But we'll still see.
Yeah. Well, I'm anxious to see Nintendo's return to glory. I think the Switch looks awesome, so I'm really rooting for this.
Are you guys
console.
Doing a lot of mother or
a lot of Switch,
Switch stuff on
Switch content?
Switch hashtag tent.
So I think we might do a right to repair type one today because iFixit's going to do a teardown later today.
Ooh.
So we're going to see where possible like failure points are, see how easy it is to repair, which obviously isn't you know, core
right
to it does tie in. It's my new obsession. This right to repair situation.
Yeah.
Like, so
awesome.
I'm just hitting it from all angles.
So motherboard.tv, motherboard.vice.com for all of that, and plus podcast on whatever it is you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, with. And if you like hearing us ramble, the other one is Radio Motherboard, which we still have.
Uh-huh. I've been on that show.
Danielle has been.
There.
She talked about Mario. Which
yeah, we
coming
did.
For you, Waypoint.
Oh, god damn.
Oh.
God damn.
Watch out.
All right, thank you.
Peace.
Thank you, Jason.
All right. I think with that, we should look at some emails.
Yeah, let's look at
perhaps.
That question bucket. Let's take a little dip.
Well, actually, I'm going to start with something. I'm going to start doing the thing that the internet has always told me not to do something.
Yeah.
Just feed the trolls.
Yeah.
And
well, sometimes there's an interesting troll situation.
An interesting troll situation.
Yeah, sometimes it's more like you give
an ITS,
like,
as they call it.
Ah, I see.
You know, an ITS, like an olive branch to a particular type of person who might be trolling, but also maybe there's something to talk about.
Yeah, so last week, Danielle brought to my attention that we had a question in the bucket. I'm talking about the first one here, actually, which was, this came in from Jonathan from Massapequa, Long Island. Now that I've realized that he's from Massapequa, I can picture him so much more clearly as someone who went to school out on Long Island.
Totally.
I have a certain Long Island, like...
There's a certain attitude.
There's a certain
there?
Attitude
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
It's a northeastern attitude, really. Like, this
totally.
Is a, like, there's a very Jersey dude version of this. There's a
not
very
far
mass
off
dude,
of Rhode Island.
Rhode Island,
where I grew
Boston.
Up.
Like,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
there
yeah.
is a version of this. I'm not going to read this whole first email, but basically, it says non Zelda fans actually exist. And this was in response to this actually may have come out before we even did that first Zelda cast, Patrick, because his question was basically. My question is, to whoever is reviewing Breath of the Wild, are you going to review the game on its actual merits and recognize that people who have never played a Zelda game and or have no interest in Zelda probably won't like it or can find what it offers in other better-made games, i.e. The Witcher or Horizon Zero Dawn? This is before Horizon came out, by the way. Or are you going to be subjective and assume everyone on Earth is slash always has been a Nintendo fan just like you and should go play it because of your personal nostalgic feelings? It goes on like this. And this was like... Okay, I'm not gonna. I'm not even gonna.
Yeah.
And then after we did that podcast, and after we did the podcast in which I was kind of saying, here is why Breath of the Wild appeals to me in a way that Horizon Zero Dawn didn't as much. Again, I liked Horizon, but nowhere near as much as I like Breath of the Wild. John wrote in. John's name, I don't know what. Who could say
John,
what I just said?
John anything.
John said.
John Snow.
John Snow said. It's actually a really good euphemism for what his real name is.
I know.
Jon Snow wrote in to say, sorry, now I'm thinking of Game of Thrones jokes. I'm not going to do it.
I mean, you can't. can.
I am.
He knows nothing.
Just want to say I love you guys, but it was comical the way that you've compared Horizon to Zelda. Horizon Zero Dawn is a far superior game to Zelda Breath of the Wild in every way. You guys went on there for a while on the podcast acting like Zelda is somehow better, but I'm sorry, it's not even close. A simplistic kiddie game that looks like it's from 5 years ago isn't even in the same class as a mature and complex masterwork that raises the bar on graphics and moves games forward as a whole like Horizon. Get off your nostalgia horses and come back to reality.
Zelda
sucks. Zelda has always sucked. It never innovates. It never pushes the envelope. It never does anything gamers haven't seen before. It never raises the bar. Horizon is fresh, original, and easily one of the best games of this generation. Funny how you have all these criticisms for Horizon Zero Dawn and none for Breath of the Wild, even though it's painfully obvious which is the better game. Typical Zelda fanboys wearing blinders, acting like other games are flawed, but this one is perfect because it's called Zelda. The subject, by the way, was HZD's greater than BOTW.
First thing we should point out, this was before either of these games was available to purchase.
Yep.
This came out before this person could ever play either of these games.
Right. So
that's a very important point to make here, I think.
This is the thing. I think we can engage on this on that level where I could be like,
I just think it's important context.
It is important context. And we could take this argument apart from a billion different ways. We could talk about how it sounds like a GameFAQs post from 1999. There's a lot of ways to go here. The thing that I did at that point was like, who is this person? The thing I did here was like, I'm baffled I'm posting this on Twitter. And the second I did that, I had that second thought, which is like, I didn't post his name or email. There's no doxing involved. I just kind of posted the text. The second thing I have, whenever I call somebody out on Twitter, whenever I dunk on anybody on Twitter, I then immediately feel a little bit guilty. So I was like, who is this guy? And so I searched our Twitter history, our mail history, and I realized he'd written to us back in February in this really nice letter about how good the Double Fine Adventure documentary is, and how much he loves Brutal Legend, and how much he loved that you wrote about Brutal Legend.
Yeah.
And the thing in my mind was like, what happens? How did you go from being this person who was so affable towards us and who enjoyed our work? Like, I think that it is often the case that what we do is we dismiss any sort of trolling.
I got it.
You got it. Did you just switch or is just
Zelda?
Switch.
So now Zelda, right. Zelda's irrelevant.
Zelda's coming. Get Zelda. All right. So my question ended up being like, hey, how do you go from someone who writes us these nice letters to someone who is like attacking our credibility? Because I think there is this conversation that we have often that is like, just don't feed the trolls, don't engage with them. There's the assumption, and often it's true, often it's a correct assumption, that they're just trying to get a rise and don't have, there's no there, that there's no like actual person behind it. There's just,
or no like value to what they're saying, right, or X, Y, and Z,
they're
that
just,
sort of thing.
They're just like trying to get your goat.
And yet I've had some of the most fascinating conversations with those very people.
Right.
Which is, as you're about to get to, something changes. Yeah. Not with all of them, not even with most of them, but with some of them.
So Jon Snow then messaged me, sent another mail to gamingadvice.com, which is where you can send your questions for the question bucket. And he said, "Geez, Austin, you really put me on blast there on Twitter, lol." I definitely came across like an immature jackass, so I guess I deserved that. I'm not at all like that. I just want to clarify my intentions. And then there's this long email that's just like, you know, I've played a bit of Zelda on a friend's advanced review copy and didn't care for it. I've played some Horizon. I've been playing it all day.
He wrote the email he should have written in the first place.
Right. You know, I just thought if I was more extreme and hyperbolic, it was more likely to incite a guttural response and get talked about.
There it is.
That's the line. There it is. So yes, I was kind of trolling you. There's no reason that both games can't be great, which is what Rami Ismail responded to when he saw this post, responded with. Judging by the comments, I knew it would piss people off if it got mentioned. Judging by the comments, I think it did. And many people point out how ridiculous it is to make statements like that, which I totally agree with. I like to play the devil's advocate a lot, and maybe sometimes I take it too far. I'm sure if I really gave Zelda a chance, I'd like it. It's just not as appealing on the surface to someone like me with no history with the franchise. Plus, I find it hard to justify buying a console to play one game. So maybe it really is a bit of FOMO subconsciously coming out. It's fear of missing out.
Yeah.
sorry again for the stupid trolley emails. And so then I was like, all right, I got you now. Like,
now we're going to talk.
Now we're going
to
talk.
We're going to talk like grown-ups. We're going to sit down and talk.
And I went on to basically say, like, it's really frustrating to have you mischaracterize us, blah, blah, blah. And then just, like, we got to a point where I just kind of tried to dig in to get at, like, where did this come from? Like, why the – I get the trolling part of it, is the attention wish. But why is it that you get so riled up about Zelda in specific? And that's – he ends up saying that it's – I'm going to read this final message from him from 3 days ago. I guess it's because of my personal taste that I don't get excited for a game like Zelda, because I'm more into games with mature themes and graphics tech that blow me away. But I'm not going to dump on him for his personal taste he's framing it in that way.
Yeah.
So when I see a game like Zelda that looks like it's intended for a younger audience, nothing wrong with that, it's just not for me. I also don't think it's true, but whatever. And resembles several other cel-shaded games from years past with the same themes of saving the princess and defeating the even Ganondorf, I get annoyed by the excitement it garners. I can't help but think, you get excited for this, but what about that? People go nuts for Zelda, but not for some other games that are great. So it could just be a manifestation of my anger towards the whole gaming community for championing certain games and not ones I personally think are more deserving of accolade. But then that's the problem with thinking like that. It really is subjective, and when you stop to think about it, you don't want to be the guy raining on someone else's parade. So I realize it's wrong, but it still irks me because popular opinion can tarnish one game's reputation and exalt another's. So it almost feels like it's personal and makes me want to lash out. It's a really stupid way to think. But yeah, it is. But also, for me, the kind of greater question here, and the thing that I want to talk about with you both, is I've been this dude at that first level of, like, why aren't people talking about the game that I think is cool? Yep. I don't then do the thing he did, right. But I have that impulse, right? Like, you're talking to someone who you say Spelunky all the time. I say Far Cry 2 all the time. I say Dragon's Dogma. Those are games that have gotten dumped on, and if I was more like him, I would be sending letters like that around when Far Cry 2 came out. I'd be saying, Call of Duty? Why would you write about Call of Duty when you could be writing about Far Cry 2, which is clearly a superior game? Have you seen the fire tech? The fire goes
maybe
everywhere.
You're immature.
You can't get malaria in Call of Duty.
You can't get Kuya. You're just an immature jingoist. That's what I probably actually wrote. At
that would
point.
Be your academic
yeah,
insult.
Exactly.
Immature jingoist.
And so I guess my question is, like, how do we... As adults, I think the thing isn't necessarily that we stop having irrational negativity about things. It's that we maybe can see it in ourselves more.
Yeah.
How do you handle that and, like, have that diehard brand loyalty without coming off like an asshole?
You have those other emails, right? The conversation that, you know, like, is realizing that it's not about brand loyalty for this person or for often
right.
when this stuff comes about. It's
this guy isn't, from what we can tell, a Sony Defense Force guy, right?
Right. Like, and there are those people, like,
yes.
But even those people that are that way, often this doesn't just happen in video games. Like, go read, discussions about comics, or go look at the way that people talk about, the DC Comics films versus the Marvel films, and you'll see very similar, like, heated personal discussions where people drag and mix, like, their corporate, preference with, like, personal insults. But I think – I don't know if you can necessarily prevent it as much as, like, talk – like, try and look at why you're having that response. Like, and are there more productive ways to express that, which is – you can just go talk to people that like Zelda about why you like Horizon, I guess, if you want to convert them. But this idea of, like, screaming and being incendiary in order to gauge a response, it says more about you as a person. And, like, why do you need why do you need the validation of others? Like, but you want the validation because to you, more games will get made like that if people are talking about, like, that thing that you like. And so if they aren't talking about that thing
right.
that you like, they won't make more of that thing that you like. So the reason the fact that people are talking about the other thing that you don't like bothers you because, well, you don't want them to make more of that.
Right. Well, that's the thing that's, like, I think one of the things for me is to try to have a wider view on what the landscape is like. It turned out, I don't know, maybe I'm still kind of mixed on this, which is that, like, one of the reasons I'm excited about Breath of the Wild is that it feels like it has justified in a weird, irrational way my taste in games like Far Cry 2 and Dragon's Dogma and systems interaction.
Or there's also, like, what's exciting about it for, like, folks, is that it packages it in a way that makes it approach, like, Far Cry 2, look, I like that game.
I appreciate it
more than I like it. But, like, it is not approachable. Like, it is a tough game to sell to a lot of people, but its idea, I've always really respected its ideas more than, like, I beat that game and I was like, I love when people talk about it. I love the stories from it, but, like, come on, like, let's also put in this discussion, that's a tough game to get into.
Yeah, totally.
And what Zelda and so does is, like, packages those ideas and both validates your excitement for Far Cry 2, but also allows people to be kind of tricked into enjoying it in a way that they wouldn't have through Far Cry 2 itself.
I think Horizon also does that, for the record, which is like it really simplifies some of the, like, oh, I know how that monster works stuff from Monster Hunter. It brings out some of the trap laying stuff from other more intense games, stuff like that.
I want to briefly say there was research done and it was published. I forget if it was the New Yorker, the New York Times, one of the big publications posted about this, that people get pleasure from reading things that validate their opinions.
Right.
Like, we actually get literal pleasure from feeling like, oh, a smart person is in agreement with me. And I think that fuels all of this. I think that psychologically speaking, people, and this goes for political opinions, this goes for, you know, entertainment and art and sports and everything else. Like, we fundamentally, our brains are designed in a pretty crappy way that makes us really want to either really, really agree with people or really, really disagree with people. And I think the technology that we have currently just enhances that in a lot of ways. And culturally, the way we're divided in certain ways enhances that in certain ways. So I think this is, like, another symptom of a much wider thing where people really, really feel so incredibly personally impassioned about things that really...
Do you feel that way ever?
Of course.
What's, like, the thing for you that gets you, like, riled up in that way?
I mean, like, I have those games as well. Like, I have those opinions. I've had this opinion. This is something that I have tried to be not shitty about. But, like, I've had a long struggle with understanding pro wrestling.
Sure.
As, like, a super MMA fan, as somebody who trains in martial arts, who likes Greco-Roman and freestyle wrestling, I'm training in that. Like, I don't dislike in any way professional wrestling. I just have not been in the, oh, I get it. Like, I haven't had my, oh, I get it moment yet with
You need the Breath of the Wild of professional wrestling.
I need a Breath of the Wild of professional wrestling. But, like, I do think I'm different in that I don't just dismiss it and say, like, that's shitty. That's for babies. That's
but there's
for
definitely,
idiots.
I mean, for what
I
it's
I feel
worth,
like an outsider
I've
for it.
I've seen you transition from being more like that's for babies to, because, like, there's a version of that that's, like, a little passive aggressive, which is, like,
yeah,
I thought you were smarter than that, like, which isn't a thing you've said specifically, but there was definitely a type of Twitter person who, like, I don't get why all these people I respect likes this thing that I don't like.
Yeah.
And there's, like,
that's fair.
And I've seen you move from
that style
to a more, like, oh, it's stunts. It's their stunt
people. It's a stunt show, and that's super rad, and, like, I get it on that level. Like, maybe it's not my thing,
right?
But I think that's cool.
Right.
Like, I think it's
you should
cool
watch Lucha Underground. I think that's the
people
of the wild.
One of these days I will.
Because it really leans into the soap opera nonsense.
Good.
There's a monster. There's a man who can turn into a phoenix.
I just can't, like, the fighting itself doesn't excite me, but, like, I think the characters and the soap opera aspects might.
Dario Cueto has a temple devoted to wrestling.
Good.
It's a temple. It's an ancient temple
of wrestling.
That's
amazing.
That's all. Dario Cueto has a temple.
All right, I'm going to have to watch that.
All right, I'm going to go back in the question bucket, and I'm going to just dig. I'm just digging in. And it seems like we have a question about Destiny here from Joel.
Did someone say Destiny?
Also, Joel showed up. Hey, Joel.
What's this question from Destiny in our bucket, Joel?
Where is it?
It's yours. This is a bit. I'm doing a bit in which you're the question.
I'm inside a bit.
Okay, so here's the bit. The bit is that a second ago, I messaged you and I said, yo, come in and do a live email about Destiny and being mad about Destiny in like 5. And then you came in and didn't do the bit.
Oh, I unbitted the bit.
Oh, you unbitted it.
What's the bit?
Okay. So,
hey, and before you do Destiny your bit, I forgot I have an interview to do in like 15 minutes. So I'm
all right. We're gonna wrap.
I'm gonna Okay, we can wrap, or I can preemptively leave. Whatever
right,
you want.
You're
to
gonna
do.
Leave. We're gonna. All right, Patrick's gonna leave. Thank you, Patrick. Patrick Klepek on Twitter. Peace. What's it say? What's
Destiny 1 power, possessions, and Eververse, which is their in-game currency for real money, items will not carry forward. However, they will remain accessible to you in Destiny 1. That's nice that you're going to leave them available to the game that you're moving on from. Because the other alternative to, in that sentence would be, you know, we're just going to delete all of your Destiny 1 information.
Wait, so what is staying? All right, so the setup here is that Bungie made an announcement today that was, hey, at some point a sequel to this game is coming, and the bulk of your stuff is not coming forward.
Yeah, we know. Can I read a little bit?
Yeah, please just read.
Because I'm reading this live. This is the bit. It's
a live read.
Is me reacting to this. Because I got a group text from my Destiny crew that was like, what the fuck? We know you've grown fond of the Guardians you created, so we do plan to preserve your character personalization. We are going to recognize the dedication and passion you've shown for this world, specifically the class, race, gender, face, hair, and marking selections for all of your characters that have achieved level 20 and completed the Blackguarded story mission will carry forward. We also plan to award those veteran accounts with honors that reflect Destiny 1 accomplishments. But what they're not carrying forward is all of your weapons, all of your, I believe, items that... exotic items, the crazy quest you went on. There was one that took us like 2 days of trying something.
Right, because like the background here is how many hours do you have in Destiny?
Last I checked, it was like 1,400.
Oh my god.
Oh. So
that is 58 days.
No, don't do the math.
Not 58 days. So here's the thing I like to do sometimes. That's 58. That's 2,458 days of hours. So if I divided 1,400 in by let's say 8, which is like 8, it's 175 days in
work
which you
days.
Put 8 like work days.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's 1,400 times 60? How many minutes?
Oh, I see. That's scary.
Your Destiny of minutes.
84,000 minutes.
Holy God.
Well, this is Joel Fowler, by the way. We didn't do a good job of introducing you. Joel Fowler, the publisher of Waypoint. We make the content, you make it so that we can make the content.
Yep.
And when you're not doing that, you're apparently putting 1,400 hours into Destiny, which is now going to not be there anymore. How does that make you feel?
So it's, okay, this is the 10-year game, right? This is the, you know, everything that you do in this game will be part of this extended journey. So... on one hand, for new players, if you're just coming into Destiny, it's great. For old players, like, it could go either way. Like,
so a thing that's weird for me about this, I'm just going to hold this like the hand mic now. This is my new look. Oh, shit, I fucked up and closed your Chrome? No, what are you on? Where was that? Whoa, I lost your okay. There we go. So here's the thing that's weird about this is it says, class, race, gender, face, hair, and marking selections.
Class, race, gender, face.
Hair and marking.
Hair
almost
marking.
Almost.
Facial marks.
So, like, it's literally, they could have done the thing where they're like, we're going to end your character, like, your character is going to, like, sunset. We're going to, like, they're going to ride off into the distance with the Guardian, or, like, they're going to be killed in a cool activity. But no, like, you're the same person. You're the same digital Guardian.
But the character creation screen in Destiny, it's so simple, right?
Like
so it's basically it would take you 5 minutes to recreate your characters, and that's what's carrying over.
Right, like I mean that's not the part I need. And also like what if that just for me feels like a waste of an opportunity to where they could do something cool where they like do something narratively so that you have to play a new character, and that would to me somehow weirdly justify it diegetically in my mind.
Almost more than this. Yeah. Now it's like here's the same person without all of the experience, without all of the grip.
I don't have the, what's the Hawk Moon. Like, all of my shit is just going to be gone.
It's gone. It's gone. So, I have a group of four friends that play Destiny, right?
Fire. Destiny friends.
Our crew, yeah.
Okay.
We have to add two for the fire team. Yeah. But half of them said, I don't think I'll be playing two. Half of them said, I'm excited for... like rebalancing it, and then one person was like, well, I guess now's the time to like switch over to PS4 because all of our characters were in Xbox and we got everything a year late.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that as like this is an opportunity for you to jump ship.
Right.
I wonder also if this is going to hit PC this year or this time.
Oh, God.
That's been something that everyone's asked for. It doesn't really affect me because my only PC at home is a not capable of running anything more than Hyper Light Drifter, but you know,
that's all you need.
I don't know. I think it's probably good to start fresh. I haven't played Destiny really since we launched. Like, I haven't really played it, you know, and we've had such a heavy cycle of games. I don't know how I feel, but I feel like they could do a better job of carrying over something that merits all the time you put in, whether it's a unique item that you got because you got the Gjallarhorn or because you've got the Gjallarhorn, however you want to pronounce it. But I just think it's like, I think they're acknowledging a lot of the mistakes that they've made in the first couple of years by wiping. Like, you don't wipe if your in-game currency and systems are perfect. Like, you just don't need to wipe.
Right. Well, like, part of the problem that they kind of cite in this piece is, or in this letter, is, hey, it's really hard for new players to start playing. Have you played any?
Oh, God. So me and Destiny have this hilarious history where I've played it like 3 or 4 times now, and I don't remember a single second of it. Like, and I'm not trying to be an asshole about that. Like, I'm really not. It just, I just haven't clicked.
Connected.
It didn't connect, you know? And again, this is not me being like, well, what's wrong with you if you don't like it? It just hasn't clicked for me.
Right. This is a pro wrestling.
There's no Destiny judgment in this room. None.
The last thing I'll say is the Eververse items. They're saying those are not going to carry over, right? Those are customizable items that have no effect on your character strength or any of that stuff.
So that's just like the glow and stuff like that.
Glow stuff, emotes, custom gun skins.
Also stuff you could buy with real money.
That's all. Most Eververse currency items. Like, every now and then you would do something that would give you some Eververse currency. But most Eververse currency items you paid for with real money. So that's saying all the emotes. Like, being able to do the running man after finishing a raid. Like, all of that stuff doesn't affect your skill. That doesn't, like, affect new players being able to get into the game. So you're essentially wiping everything that people have purchased.
That's the stuff. That's the one that bugs me the most, I think, is, like, please, I spent money on this dance. Like, I spent money on this dope sparrow skin or whatever.
Yeah, I want to do the running man after finishing a raid.
Right.
And I paid money for that, and now
it... God damn it.
Now you can't.
You have to do it in real life now.
Yeah. Well, that's a given.
Yeah, he does that already.
He's already doing that, but he wants his character to do it too. I understand.
We're going to have to pay attention and see what comes next for Destiny, Joel. I'm sure when it's time for... when's Destiny 2 or the sequel to Destiny gets announced, you will be on the front lines letting
us
know.
We'll talk.
It just seems weird to say the sequel to Destiny. Destiny feels like such a end-all concept. It's like sequel to Omega. Like, where do you... Omega 2? Like,
Omega Infinity.
Omega Infinity Zero Dawn. Right.
It's like WoW 2.
Earth 2.
The thing to think about is just, like, I do have a lot of faith that Destiny 2 is whatever that is. Not a lot of faith. I if you made me bet, I would say it's going to be a better game than the first Destiny because of the people who are working on it. My understanding is it's a lot of the Taken King team that kind of went into Destiny and figured out how to rebalance it to make it have a better on-ramp, to be more interesting mechanically, to fix the economy.
And the Taken King story was the best, I feel like,
By far.
DLC, it was the best that they did. You know, they really didn't capture that, like, I want to finish this campaign with the other DLCs for me as much.
And I hope that there are lots of lessons that they learned. The Dark One in chat notes that the map editing tools for Destiny 1 were really limiting. There's this great, I think it's Jason Schreier, second time he's been mentioned today from Kotaku.
The Jason Waypoint Radio test.
Yeah, he did this deep dive into, like, what went wrong with Destiny 1, and one of the big ones was... It took them a night to output a level or like to output a test level. And so if something was wrong, then they had to recompile it. And it took another full 12 hours to see it test it.
Right. The tools were so clunky that they couldn't react fast enough. It like took way too many resources to change one little thing in a map. That was a super good article. And it explained a lot why you had these competing forces of people probably there that knew exactly what to do or what you should do in terms of the path to success for this game, but couldn't do it because of the tools they had.
Yeah.
You know, so...
We'll see.
Thanks for the bit.
Thank you for coming through for the bit and the question bucket.
Thank you, Joel.
I think between those two, we normally pull one from deep in the question bucket on Fridays, but between the guy who hates us because we like Zelda and Joel...
Between Jon Snow, Joel, and Jason.
All J's.
Yeah, we got all J's. And Jason Schreier.
This
is the J-Cast.
What's up with the J-Cast?
You know.
I think it's going to do it for us this week. the end of the week. Switch is out. Go play your Switch.
Yeah.
We are obviously reachable on the internet. You can find us at twitch.tv/waypoint, where you could have watched this live. Yeah. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint. You can find us on Facebook at waypointvice, Twitter or facebook.com/waypointvice, youtube.com/waypointvice. You can read everything that we write at waypoint.vice.com, new.donk.city,
bazinga.zone,
digitalpyramids.zone. We got another Switch. We got a gray Switch here. Right here.
Gray Switch, colorful Switch. Switch.
We got all sorts of Switches. Switches on Switches.
You're hitting Switches on Switches.
That was good.
Yeah.
You can find me at Austin underscore Walker on Twitter. Danielle, where can people
Danielle
find you?
Danielle R.I. on Twitter.
Oh, where can people find you, Joel?
You can find me at Destiny. 14.
Destiny Dork 127.
Underscore Joel.
Free Magic, right?
You can find me at Free Magic on Twitter. Thank you.
And at Tim is at...
Tim Barnes 451.
Yeah.
Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
Tim Barnes 451. That's it.
Love it.
It's a reference.
You should definitely follow Tim and Joel because they're both great.
They're both great. Patrick Klepek you can find on Twitter at Patrick Klepek. I don't know, what's Jason Kettler's?
Oh, I don't know his Twitter.
But you should go check out
Motherboard.
Their new show, Motherboard on Motherboard.
Plus Podcast.
Yes.
And Bowen did our theme song.
What's the name of it?
It's Miss You off the EP Pale Machine.
Which you can find out more about at waypoint.zone/BOEN. That's going to do it. If you have questions for us, also this one, please send them to gamingadvice.com.
Subject questions.
Put that word in there. We'll know it's a question. Also, don't insult us. Just don't insult us.
Don't insult. Look, constructive criticism is a thing that is useful, but don't be like, you suck. Because that makes people defensive, and it hurts, and it's not nice, and be nice.
We've done one now. We've done the one.
Like, we did
reach
it.
Out to a troll.
We did it.
They'll get corny if we do it again.
Yeah.
So, nah.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Peace.
Peace and love.